All right, we're going to go ahead and get started so we can stay on schedule. I'm sick and I made it in, so all the slackers who aren't here can try and catch up. So I want to thank everyone for coming. I appreciate all who are attending and who've contributed to this directly and indirectly. It's going to be a great 2 days of both keynotes and panel sessions across a whole range of topics, from disease areas to therapeutic modalities to kind of broader conceptions of issues going on in oncology, such as pricing. Certainly want to thank the sponsors this year, Lilly Oncology, Takeda Oncology, Pfizer Oncology, Geron, NanoString, and Torreya Partners. And also thank our advisory board. They know who they are. Unfortunately, some of them can't be here, which is too bad, because some always are a bit of rabble-rousers, like Neil Rosen, but in any event. And then just a quick reminder that there is a nice cocktail reception with, quote-unquote, heavy hors d'oeuvres tonight. So you can swing by that before whatever wonderful dinner you'll be going to in New York City. So I'm going to give a brief introductory talk before I introduce our esteemed keynote speaker. And first thing I'm going to do is just briefly recap our tenure with Cancer Progress, which we acquired about 5 years ago. So this is a brief history of our time from our original somewhat swirl soft ice cream logo to the new logo that we have now. And it's been an exciting 5 years, which, you know, in a recap kind of showcases a lot of changes that have happened in that time period, from a focus on, you know, small molecules and antibodies and kind of a lot of targeted therapy, including, of course, angiogenesis, which had been one of the leading areas at the time. The first beginnings of discussions around immuno-oncology and obviously big data issues. The beginnings of discussions around value and pricing and challenges within those areas. Increasing importance and increasing number of panels and sessions and keynotes around immuno-oncology. And then ultimately coming to the point where now, you know, really the two, I think, major themes that will be running through all the different sessions, no matter what they are, will be the issue of immuno-oncology and the issue of pricing and value of drugs. And so today, I will be introducing Dr. Patrick Soon-Shiong after I give my brief intro, kind of the state of where we are in oncology. And he, as well as Peter Kulchinski, who's keynoting tomorrow, will both talk, but from different angles, about the cancer moonshot. And I think it's an interesting change in rhetoric from the idea of the war on cancer to now the moonshot. Much more politically correct and much more doable, something you achieve, right? There's an end goal there. Not sure what happens with war. In any event, so this is borrowed from Celgene. The moonshot idea is kind of everywhere now. I do want to remind people that we're still in a situation where we have a huge amount of drug development, but there are still some cancers where there are major unmet needs, where you can see the red bar of mortality almost equals the incidence of the disease, such as lung cancer. And although there's a rough proportionality of the occurrence of the pipeline activity to the incidence and the unmet needs, it's not strictly one-to-one, and there certainly remain some high unmet need areas. We'll be talking about two great exemplars of success, both in IO with melanoma and with a whole diverse range of therapeutic modalities in myeloma today. I want to remind people that, you know, if you look at consensus analyst forecasts for 2020, you can see that there are six of the top 15 drugs will be oncology, of which I think two are in heme, four are in solid. That includes Opdivo, the anti-PD-1 checkpoint from BMS. That's still a significant proportion being contributed by oncology. And you can starting to see the sales growth starting to really be driven by IO. And if you actually break that down, you can see that compared to, you know, even antibodies, which have really been the kind of the hallmark, so these would be non-IO antibodies, that IO is a significant driver of growth in oncology. Now, that being said, we see a lot of the same faces in oncology in terms of franchises, such as Roche, slash Genentech still being dominant, but a number of new players coming to the fore, mostly driven by, you know, significant one or two significant products, such as Astellas with Xtandi, or the AbbVie slash J&J with the Pharmacyclics product, Ibrutinib. But when you look at growth, clearly, you know, it's these newer entrants that are having much bigger growth because they have a smaller base to grow from, such as AbbVie with Ibrutinib. But one of the interesting things about oncology remains that while, you know, it's not necessarily having the most launches, say, in the past 2 years that we looked at here, represented by those bubbles, red and blue, when you look at the launches and then look at the projected analyst forecast for what those products will achieve 5 years hence from their launch, you can see that you get a very nice ratio when you look at oncology in terms of the projected blockbuster sales for those products versus the number. So it's a good place to be in oncology. It also still represents a vast proportion of the development pipeline, with a lot of mechanisms that once were at the fore, such as anti-angiogenesis, kind of being pushed aside for immuno-oncology, which is obviously a very broad and diverse category. And, you know, you'll see more details and drill downs on that at the two I.O. sessions that I chair tomorrow. And deal-making, of course, in oncology remains at the forefront. And not surprisingly, when you look at the kind of the jump from 2014 to 2015, the vast majority of those are I.O. deals. And in fact, here are the top 2015 oncology deals, both by upfront dollar values and total BioWorld dollars. And the vast majority of them, I think roughly 80% in both categories, are IO agents. That includes adoptive cell therapies, antibodies, both next-gen checkpoints, as well as innate targets, bispecifics, vaccines, et cetera. But one thing we have to remember, of course, is that, you know, the cancer is always a, I don't want to quite say worthy advocate, but certainly a quite a tough competitor, and that tumor heterogeneity and plasticity, which has long been talked about, continues to be important. And in fact, the extremity of that was highlighted by a recent paper in PNAS by Ling et al. About the degree of this heterogeneity, which is quite astounding. And it does suggest a number of things. One, it suggests that maybe we have to kind of get out of the box and think of other ways to approach dealing with cancer. And so here's one opinion piece from Nature Reviews Cancer about the idea of trying to achieve stable reversion rather than the more hard nut approach that we've taken. But of course, the more tangible one that we have evidence of right now, and thanks to NanoString for this this great slide, is, of course, immunotherapy, because if you're going to deal with a foe who is very heterogeneous and plastic, what better to do that than the immune system, which has its own tremendous diversity and plasticity. But that being said, you know, it's not like you'll be done, said and done in many cases. You will probably need a range of agents in the toolkit, and you will probably need to sequence these appropriately, because there are acquired resistance that happens with immunotherapy. And of course, all this is happening in the context, whether immunotherapy or otherwise, of the increased scrutiny and challenges of value and pricing, with most recently, of course, the issue about the wastage that Peter Bach and others published in British Medical Journal, now more coolly called BMJ. So that's my quick rundown of kind of the state of the art. I want to thank a number of people, consultants and analysts who helped me on this. James Lee, Leandra Drina, Eva Dixon, and Sam Lands. And I want to pause briefly at the end as an in memoriam for Holbrook Court, who passed much too young and would have contributed greatly and would have continued to contribute greatly to the world of immuno-oncology, as well as hemophilia research.